Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Hi, Katie. Welcome to What You Read Next podcast.
Hi, thanks for so much for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am an author. I write saucy romances that are like my saucy dark erotic romance, I guess this is like the term. And I've written over 60, I think, at this point. So I've been around a minute.
Oh my gosh, I love this. I feel like we have like a healthy backlist. Like, you know, like people are like, where to start? And you have a little bit of everything, like just like for people like, okay, what are you selling? What are you in the mood? And there's like Katie Robert for you.
Yeah, my 10-year anniversary of publishing is coming up next year, I think. So there's been lots of different genres I've explored within the romance subgenre in that time.
Well, what was your romance journey? Were you a romance reader before you were a writer, or like which one came first?
I like a lot of people found romance like when I was like 13, 14-ish. My mom was a big Iris Johansson fan. Her thrillers, my mom wasn't a romance reader. And so I read one her thrillers and realized that at the library that she had romances. And I was like, well, we'll give this a shot. And so I read The Magnificent Rogue, which holds up pretty well. I reread it recently, like in the last year, and it's a scorcher. It is a scorcher. So from there, I devoured her backlist, and I kind of wandered off and got into like fantasy and urban fantasy when that was like really hot in like the early 2000s, and then found myself wanting more of the romantic elements in the urban fantasy, and so I kind of came back through paranormal romance and never left.
I love this. And so what was your writing journey? Like, what inspired you to start writing novels?
Actually, so I have always written stuff. Like, back in high school, I loved it. It was my thing. But I got married very young, and my ex-husband was military, so we moved to Germany when I was, like, 18 and had a baby. And so I was very isolated, didn't speak the language, and eventually had two children under, like, three. And so I kind of pulled... It feels so weird to say this, but I pulled a Nora Roberts and that I had to write so I didn't like burn the house down because I was going nuts. And I was actually inspired by Twilight in that like I was like, Stephanie Meyer wrote a book and got published and like, look how successful it is and wow, that's really cool. And like, I bet like if she can do it, I could probably do it. And so I did not sell my first book or my second. Number eight is when I sold, fast forward a couple years and a divorce, and like picked up a book and fixed it and like submitted it and sold directly to a publisher at the time. And which was sci-fi romance, which is no longer in print. It doesn't exist anymore. But from there was right around the time 50 Shades was really taking off. Mm-hmm. Or had been taking off, and like the whole wave, like people were freaking out over, you know, erotic romance. And my editor came to me and was like, hey, I know you want to do this full time, because I was like a single mom working a minimum wage job. Like, I was like, yeah, I want to do this full time. And they were launching a new imprint of erotic, short erotic romance. And I just happened to write the book super fast, put it in or submit it, and it launched the imprint with another book. And just caught that 50 Shades wave, and like, and from there it's history, more or less. Like, lots of ups and downs since then, but I've been writing full time since 2012.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing! Congratulations, that's like a big feat, you know.
there's been some ups and downs. The industry has changed a lot in the last 10 years, but
yeah,
I'm still here.
Yeah. And so what's your writing process? You like, because you produce a lot of books, like, so do you write every day? Like, what's your writing take, you know?
So I am one of those writers that if I don't write every day, I forget how to do it. And so I don't, like, I have a very high output, but when you, like, math it out, I write maybe 2,000 to 3,000 words a day, if that, depending on, like, the day and, like, what's going on in life. But I usually get up and write in the morning from, like, 6-ish to 10 or 11, and then use my afternoons for administrative stuff or don't work or whatever. I'm a morning writer because once noon hits, it's like I'm Cinderella and my brain is checked out. So, but I do write most mornings, most days a week, I would say, which adds up, like, when you start doing that math, like, it adds up to quite a few books.
Yeah, it does. I can imagine. Yeah. I think knowing that your ideal time is in the morning to get that first thing done and then just, like, allowing yourself to do the rest of the stuff in the afternoon, I think it's more productive. Like, you're able to produce, you know.
Yeah, when it's, I, like, the writing industry is a lot, everybody has advice, which is awesome. Like, people tend to be pretty free with their advice, but the downside of that is there's a lot of, like, well, this works for me, and so, like, it takes a while to figure out what works specifically for you. Like, I don't, when I draft, I don't edit. I don't go back and look at it. If something changes, I'll leave myself notes to, like, look back. Because if I stop, if I lose that momentum, then I'm sunk and then I'm in trouble. So, but it took me a really long time to figure that out. Because a lot of people edit as they write and that works for them. And I was like, maybe that'll work for me. It doesn't. It really doesn't.
That's really good. I love this. So what has been the process of writing during the pandemic? Has it been easier, any harder? Like, yeah.
I am fortunate in that when I get stressed out or overwhelmed or, you know, really depressed, I write more because writing's my escapism. Mm-hmm. And so pandemic, I wrote more words last year than I did have to date, like year annually to date, solely because the only place in my house where my family is not sitting on top of me is my office. So I'm like, well, I'm here. I guess I'll work a little more. And so, yeah, it's actually been, like, really good creatively. Like, I discovered last year that I work best when I have quarterly 2 weeks to just have a fun dessert project. And that has opened up, like, all sorts of new doors for me. And that's where my taboo books came from, is just, like, these are just little dessert projects. Like, they're not heavy in character or plot. They're just really, really high heat level and, like, taboo-ish. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the pandemic has obviously been hard, but, like, creatively, I'm like, well, I guess I'm just going to keep working until I can, like, look outside and not be totally depressed. We're not there yet. we're not there yet, but...
We're not there yet. Oh, but I love your dessert projects so much.
They're just getting wilder as time goes on, so it's going to be really interesting to see what the rest of this year brings when it comes to those.
How do you come up with the ideas? Like, you know, like, do they come to you? Like, or do you have, like, an idea staff? Like, because there's so much, you know.
I have at any given time, like, probably 20 books in development in my head, like, just kicking around, because I am very impulsive. It looks like, but on the outside, it looks like I'm more impulsive than I am, because usually there's some, like, thought process that just, maybe not at the front of my brain, but it is clicking in the back. And so I have actually a sticky note on my computer that has, like, these four elements create my, like, overall author brand. So if a project is bonkers and high heat level and, like, villains or anti-heroes or monster types and really tropey, then usually I'm like, well, we'll just go forward with it and see what happens. The dessert projects specifically, I don't usually, like, with the taboo books, I have a list of them that I would like to cover at some point, but usually it's like, what do I feel like writing at this moment, like, when I have the time. The other stuff, I schedule it, and as soon as I schedule it with my editor, it has to happen, and so I trap myself intentionally to keep my schedule.
Thank you. I am, like, so curious about it, especially for prolific writers, like, you know, how do you keep tabs with all the ideas, and because you dabble into so many different topics. It's just like so curious to do. So
yeah, it's been really interesting. Because I usually have like a foundational series. It's like right now my foundational indie series is the Sabine Valley series. And so those books keep a pretty regular schedule. And then the rest of it is just barely controlled chaos. And of course I have, you know, Neon Gods in my traditional contract, but that's only three books. And the third book will be written before the first one comes out right now. I'm writing it right now. And so it will be, my due date is my release date. So those books will be finished. They just take time to come out.
Yeah. So let's talk about Neon Gods. And like, what is the elevator pitch? I absolutely adore it. Spoiler alert, I adore it. But let's start with the elevator pitch.
It's a contemporary retelling of Hades and Persephone. And she's like a socialite type. And he is sort of a underworld-ish, not quite mobster, but like sort of, like adjacent. and she's... fate, or like kind of bargained in marriage to Zeus and doesn't want it, so she runs and ends up with Hades, and sexy shenanigans ensue.
Yes, sexy shenanigans ensues. I love that Hades is their cinnamon roll, and you know, in the ooze gooze way, like she even tells him that he is a cinnamon roll. Like he's like so nice, you know, even though he's like underworld bad guy, you know.
He's like that, I don't know if you've ever seen that meme of that bat, that cute little baby bat that's like, I am the darkness. Like, that's Hades. Yeah. Like, he's like, I'm a monster, and I'm so bad, and everyone's scared of me, and everyone around him who, like, has any kind of contact with him is like, we love you! So, but yeah. He's definitely a monster of his own making as far as he's concerned, but, like, no one else believes it except him.
Yeah. So lots of research to get all the Greek mythology process, like getting the 13 and coming up with like the stories.
Well, like a significant number of us, I was super obsessed with Greek mythology like growing up and revisited it again and again. And I mean, you can't throw a rock without hitting a Hades and Persephone retelling, and which is my favorite thing because there's so many different, they pull different elements of the original myth with each different book, and I just love them. So it's the Hades, Persephone, Demeter, like, relationships is something that I pulled on in the past for, like, other books. But this time I wanted to be really intentional. And, like, when I crafted, because my books are all technically contemporary, but I build them up almost like paranormal world building. Mm-hmm. And there's so many gods, like, in Greek mythology. And so I kind of was like, well, 13 is a great number. I like the number 13. So which ones would I put in as, like, these titles to rule Olympus, which means some of them, like Hestia, got like left on the side, sorry. But and then from there it was kind of like reverse engineering, because there's always a Zeus in Olympus, but it's not always the same person. It doesn't even have to be a dude, it can be like any gender. It's just the eldest child inherits the title when the former Zeus dies, and so each title has their own little quirk on like how the person is chosen to become that title, and which sounds super confusing, but I promise it's less confusing in the books. But so but in this world currently, nobody really believes Hades exists anymore, because the last Hades, as far as like the upper city is concerned, like died 30 years ago. And so it's kind of like he's like the boogeyman of Olympus until he's not. And I love Hades. He doesn't get enough credit. I mean, he's starting to get enough credit because, like, Lore Olympus is super popular right now. And so everybody's like, oh, Hades is really cool. And I'm like, yes, get on the train. Let's go.
Yes, I love it. I love this Hades and Persephone. Like, I read quite a few, but this is, like, by far one of my favorite ones, because it brings the type of hero that I love to read. But at the same time, it gives me, like, the sense of, like, you know, the whole tension between Hades and Persephone. Like the whole process of like, you know, the chemistry, and like, are they gonna do it? Are they gonna get together?
Well, like I love a sunshine and a grumpy, which is like what this story is. But I really, really love a sunshine character who you like weaponizes it, where it's like it's a mask they used for survival or to keep people at a distance or like what have you. And that's kind of how I've always envisioned Persephone. It's not necessarily innocent, like sweet one, but more like this is what like the mask I wear to survive like this world. And so, and she uses it to needle Hades, because of course she does.
Awesome. So what can we expect for the rest of the series?
So the second book is Psyche and Eros. It's a marriage of convenience, like sort of like morality chain, in that there's Aphrodite, you know, is pretty freaking angry for a number of reasons, like, you're gonna kill that lady right there. And Psyche was nice to Eros, like, once, ever. And he's like, so he feral cats her and is like, we should get married instead and it'll protect you. And, like, this is definitely makes sense. Don't ask questions. And so they get married to, like, save her from Aphrodite, and it gets complicated. And then the third book is Helen, Achilles, and Patroclus. I still cannot say his name properly, and I really need to before that book comes out, because... it's the Greek names trip me up. So, but it's a menage with those fellows and Helen, because I hate Paris with the hate of a thousand fiery suns, and this is my justice for Helen, because she deserved better.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait. So you have a paranormal series, and Queen is coming out soon?
Towards the end of summer, probably, yeah.
So that actually I got into, like, I don't like blood play, but this book was, like, full of blood play, and I was, like, living for it.
So. Yeah, I just, this one came about, because it was originally a dessert project, and then it was like, well, I can't fit this all in one book, like, dessert project length, so I guess we're going to do three. Whoops. But I just... like, the idea of, I'm not even a huge vampire person, but it just sort of happened, like, it happened, and there's three sexy vampires and one lady, and their bites are, you know, orgasmic. It's, I don't know.
Yes, that's what I can explain. Like, it's just, like, the bites are orgasmic, and there's just a lot of blood, but it works. Like it works, like, just go for it. And there's, like, and it's just like the vampires keep popping up. There's, like, another one and another one and another one.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, and we all used to date before, so I guess we're just gonna be together, except, like, kind of angry about it. And yeah, and then there's, like, a mating bond type element, and it's a lot of, like, my favorite things in paranormal romance thrown together and, like, notched up to 10, because I'm me and I can't do anything in half measures. So
yes, okay, so I'm only looking forward, because you do end with cliffhangers, so like, okay.
Yes, this will be the last for now series, because okay. There will be a spin-off series from the vampires. It's going to be monster romance, but those will each be a different couple in each book, so they will end, like, and satisfyingly. The cliffhangers are rough for me too, because I feel so bad, but also, like, I'm like, I'm sorry, but I couldn't fit it in one book, so we're cliffhangering it. Here we go.
I love this. So let's see. Let's talk about book recommendations. So,
okay,
Kat, you're the queen of book recommendations and book talk. I absolutely adore them. Like, that's, you're one of the reasons why I go to book talk, is to look at your recommendations. And I know you've been the monster, which has been fun. You know, someone was like, a little too much, but I'm like, you know, maybe I'll try some monsters. But just pick a theme or pick some trope or specific, and you can give us some book recommendations.
So my favorite trope is one that people are like, I like that, but I didn't know what it's called. It's morality chain. So, like, one character, usually the male main character, is, like, sort of a sociopath. Like their criminal acts vary, but, like, they have no, like, moral compass until their love interest shows up and is like, hey, you can't just, like, you know, murder up people or steal stuff or, like, whatever. And they're like, oh, I guess I'll just adopt your moral compass because I love you. And so that's, like, my favorite thing ever. And I have three books to recommend that if you're... So the first is Block Shot by Kennedy Ryan. Check the content warnings, because they're a little hefty. But it's just, like, from the moment, he's like, I don't care who you're with, what you're doing, whatever, like, you're the one for me. And he's so unrepentant about it, and it is just, like, crack for me. Like, I love Jared the most. Number two is Luca by Theodora Taylor. And I don't know how she does it, but if anybody else wrote the heroes she writes, I would, like, try to run them over with my car. Because they are, they're not great people, but they go soft for their heroine, and like it's very textbook morality chain. Like he's like a mobster and she's like trying to be a lawyer, and like you can't murder up people, and he's like, I guess I won't murder people because you asked me not to. Like, that one does end on a cliffhanger. So there's like, it's like a duet. And then the final one is Heart of Obsidian by Nalini Singh. Is just Caleb Kirchick. he's like, well, I definitely was going to kill the whole world, but I guess I won't because it would make her sad, so I won't do it. Like, it's just that element of romance is just, I eat it up with a spoon. And so those three books like really embody that trope and are also like really good, so highly recommend.
Oh my gosh, I love this recommendation. I didn't think about morality change, but it does make a difference. Like it does, it's a trope that I can now see. I'm like, I do like this trope, you know?
Yeah, it's often like enemies to lovers or like some element, like you see it more often in like dark romance because you know, you have the scary bad character and the one who's like soft, and the bad one becomes slightly softer in their romance as a result, but usually not to like other people around them. Like they will still murder up the world, but
yeah,
hesitate a little bit.
Soft for the hero or heroine, you know. So I love this. Tell us where you can find you online.
Oh, I'm all over the place. I am most active on Twitter and on, well, now TikTok and Instagram. I'm like on Facebook technically, but not really. Like if you want to ever like get interaction with me, Facebook's not the way to go these days, but I'm a Twitter addict. It's all my name. yeah. And I have a newsletter. If you ever want like direct contact news, that's a good way to go about it. Cause social media is so fickle.
And you have a Patreon.
Yes.
Tell us about the Patreon.
I am a professional. I am very good at plugging myself. Obviously, I forgot I had a Patreon. Yes, I have a Patreon. It's was originally set up because people kept asking, like my Mafia series from a couple years ago, people kept asking me, like, what are the characters doing? What are they up to? And like, I just don't have time to like write check-ins for free for people just, you know, like in my schedule. And so I crafted, like basically every month my Patreon people vote on what couple or throuple or single person or like whatever that they'd like to see. And then whatever has the most votes, I write a check-in with those people, which has been really interesting seeing what characters people want to see again and again, or like sometimes they have like types of scenes I'd like or whatever. And it's a really fun creative exercise for me. But I also have, I ship paperbacks through it, I do audiobooks through it, and then I have a swag box that goes out every other month that has like the paper, signed paperbacks, and then like miscellaneous things that I think are super cool, like usually mugs and like some candles or what have you. Like this one is a 20-ounce tumbler that says Sword Cross Guaranteed, which is my brand.
Yes, it's all about the Sword Cross. I did actually ask, so your book, I think it was Paranormal. Kara was referred to me to read it, and I was like, did the Sword Cross? And they were like, I don't know. And I was like, I only like when the Sword Cross.
You know? Same. It feels like a missed opportunity if they don't cross. Like, I understand that sometimes that's just not what people want. Like, I get that. That's just, that's what I want. And so my books will always, always have, if there are more than one sword, they will cross, or I guess other, like the menage is always closed entirely.
Yeah. I like those closed.
Yeah. Same. I always feel like sad if it didn't happen. I'm like, oh, we could have had it.
You could have the, like, I don't know. It just adds more to the story. Like,
yeah,
the relationship grows. Like, they all have to be together.
Yeah, I just, like, and I know in real life, poly romance, like, is all sorts of different varieties and, like, what mm-hmm. have you. And that's, you know, awesome that we have that variety in writing as well. But, like, again, I just want it to cross. I want it to close. I want everybody to be, like, real intimate explicitly with each other. Like, so that's what I write. And I usually have, like, some kind of, I try to put it in my blurb at the bottom, like, if there's, like, so you know that is there's some sword crossing, and, you know, yeah. That's how it works.
I love this. Oh my gosh. Thank you, Katie, for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was awesome.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For book recommendations, author interview archives, and other fun book resources and tips, please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com. The What You Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Network. To discover new shows to listen and love, please visit frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What You Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.